For over 100 years, the government has trained and deployed animals as espionage agents. Starting in the Civil War, carrier pigeons delivered messages from the front lines. Later, dolphins were trained to detect mines. But now, there has been a breakthrough that goes beyond anything that science had imagined. A covert espionage team known as G-Force.
This is a rodent.
We're official agents of the FBI.
Holla!
Their IQ is off the charts, and their fine motor skills are incredible.
You know that their DNA is 98.7% identical to that of humans, right?
No, how would I know that?
Agent Blaster.
Weapons and transportation.
I'm pretty sure this is animal cruelty, but I love it!
Yeah! Agent Juarez.
Martial arts with a secret weapon. Don't you wish your girlfriend was
hot like me? Whoa.
Agent Speckles.
Cyber intelligence.
I'm setting up a worm to decipher.
You're a genius.
I'm a mole. I got a thing for worms.
Agent Mooch.
High-tech surveillance.
Agent Darwin.
G-Force team leader.
The fate of the free world rests on my shoulders.
This might be a good time for a nap.
This summer,
our time has arrived.
Your mission is to stop this man, Leonard Saber. He's created a mechanized army that threatens the entire free world.
That's impossible.
The odds are 1,000,000 to 1.
Time to get this party started.
But that's just how they like it.
Hit my ride.
Suck in your gut.
I am.
Get ready for a motion picture event in Disney Digital 3D.
You just got outdriven by guinea pigs.
That was off the hook.
Darwin, Blaster, Juarez, Speckles, Mooch.
G-Force.
Ew, Grandpa, what's that?
It's a horrible crime against nature, I think.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing well. It's another day where we get to record a podcast about a Nicolas Cage movie.
Right.
And that I'm thankful for.
Well, I'm glad, Mike, and I'm glad you're thankful because we're going to get into a really interesting Nicolas Cage movie in a bit. Produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, his longtime collaborator. I believe this is the sixth or seventh movie they've made together. At this point, I've honestly lost count. I didn't check.
it's another Bruckheimer joint coming at you.
Exactly. Now, producer Jerry Bruckheimer, of course, has been incredibly influential in the career of Nicolas Cage. He is the one who essentially launched Cage's action career, beginning with The Rock, continuing with movies like Con Air, Gone in 60 Seconds, both national treasures. Now, Bruckheimer had enjoyed a long, successful career as a producer throughout the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. In addition to those movies, he was also a producer of Beverly Hills Cop, Top Gun, Bad Boys, the Pirates of the Caribbean series. But something has happened in the 2010s, Mike, to Bruckheimer's career. This decade has been much less prolific for him, thanks to a string of flops. The Prince of Persia, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, The Lone Ranger, Deliver Us from Evil, Pirates of the Caribbean 5, which underperformed pretty severely in the U.S. And I like to think that that all started with the movie we're about to discuss today, 2009's G-Force.
Really? You think this is the reason Bruckheimer doesn't exist?
I'm not going to say it's the reason, because this movie was actually kind of successful at the box office, but I think at the point where he was making movies like G-Force, yes, I think that's I think this is the starting point for the downfall of Jerry Bruckheimer's career, at least this decade. Yeah, and we are now at a point in this podcast, Mike, where even if I didn't see the movie, I have a pretty distinct memory of that movie coming out into theaters, right? We talked about that with, like, I saw Ghost Rider, and I had a memory about seeing that, but we talked about it with, like, Knowing. Like, I remember Knowing coming out in theaters, and I remember Bangkok Dangerous coming out in theaters. G-Force is no exception. I believe my distinct memory is me going, that looks stupid, and moving on with my life. But maybe I didn't process at the time just how profoundly weird it was that this movie exists. Because this is a children's movie about hyper-intelligent guinea pigs who work as a secret wing of the FBI that take down a terrorist plot. That's weird.
Yeah, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Do you remember G-Force coming out in theaters, Mike? Do you remember seeing trailers for this?
I do remember it coming out, and my only memory is just an image of a guinea pig with like a high, like a walkie-talkie, like Mission Impossible headset on.
Right.
And that's it. So, yes. It's a similar situation to you, I guess.
Yeah, fair enough. So, the idea for this movie actually came from director Hoyt Yeatman's son, who was 5 years old when he came up with it. And yeah, that sounds about right.
That all tracks.
Yeah. Yeatman was primarily a visual effects artist who had a relationship with Bruckheimer. He worked on several of his movies, like The Rock and Con Air and Armageddon. He was also one of the co-founders of DreamQuest Images, the visual effects company that broke new ground with the underwater effects for James Cameron's The Abyss in 1989. They won a special Oscar for that.
Wow.
So he was a pretty big name in the visual effects world, and Yeatman brought his son's idea to Bruckheimer, and Jerry liked it so much that he hired Yeatman to direct, and it still remains the only film that Yeatman has ever directed. And since then, he's only got one more credit on his IMDb, and that's as a visual effects supervisor on Bryan Singer's Jack the Giant Slayer in 2013.
Oh boy!
Yeah, and I appreciate the image of him pitching this movie to Jerry Bruckheimer, especially because I don't know if you you watched Arrested Development, Mike. Are you a fan of that show?
Not as religiously as other people have.
Okay,
but I have seen episodes and stuff.
In the fourth season, the Netflix season of Arrested Development, there's a subplot where they're trying to pitch a movie based on the life of the Bluths, and there's a bit where they're going to different studios, and one of them is Jerry Bruckheimer's studio. And John Krasinski plays like Jerry Bruckheimer's like manager or whatever, like some like his agent at the front desk or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's pitching the studio, and the studio is literally like this gigantic boat that looks like the Jerry Bruckheimer like boat. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like it's in the. The Bruckheimer boat is like in the background of the scene, and John Krasinski looks back back to the boat and looks back and he's like, yeah, Jerry's not gonna get off the boat for this one. But this is a movie that Bruckheimer got off the boat for, Mike. This is G-Force.
Yes.
And it's actually the very first 3D film of Jerry Bruckheimer's career, too, which is, you know, interesting to note. This being 2009, tons of theaters were getting equipped with 3D to prepare for the pending release of James Cameron's Avatar, which popularized 3D in a big way. And to write this guinea pig epic, Bruckheimer enlisted two screenwriters familiar to this podcast, Cormac and Marianne Wibberly, the husband and wife duo who wrote both National Treasure movies.
Look at that.
Yeah, so definitely some experience writing some family-friendly Bruckheimer Disney entertainment, so that's something. As for Nicolas Cage, he provides the voice of Speckles, a star-nosed mole who is described as the brains of G-Force on Wikipedia. And...
Amazing.
Yeah, and to this movie's credit, it boasts an absolutely killer cast. The cast for this is pretty incredible, Mike.
Yeah, I agree.
The lead guinea pig is voiced by one of our very favorite actors, who starred with Nicolas Cage once before in Matchstick Men, and who just won himself an Oscar this past weekend. Academy Award winner Sam Rockwell plays Darwin the guinea pig in this movie.
I think really star of G-Force should precede Academy Award winning, but...
Yeah, well, when he walked up to the Oscars, they said Sam Rockwell was the star of 2009's G-Force, directed by Hoyt Yeatman. That's what they said. That's what the little blurb said the first, yep. As he was walking up to the stage. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. And then the rest of the voice cast includes Tracy Morgan as Blaster, Penelope Cruz as Juarez, and that's a Captain Corelli's Mandolin reunion right there, lest we forget. So that's pretty cool. Jon Favreau, director of Iron Man and Swingers and stuff like that, plays Hurley. Steve Buscemi plays Bucky, and that's a Zondali and Con Air reunion going on right there. So the third movie with Nicolas Cage and Steve Buscemi is the one where they both play gerbils. Yeah, and voice actor D. Bradley Baker plays Mooch the Housefly, and that's a role that basically just requires him to make noises, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine, because he does that a lot. He's known for his role as Klaus in American Dad. He's also in Legend of the Hidden Temple, Avatar the Last Airbender, and a whole lot of other stuff. And then, meanwhile, the live-action cast of this movie is headed up by Zach Galifianakis as Ben Kendell, the human who runs G-Force. And this was released about a month and a half after The Hangover. So the world was at peak Galifianakis at this point. That was like his breakout role, and his next movie was G-Force.
And he somehow survived it.
And he somehow made it through. The film's villain, Leonard Saber, is played by Bill Nighy, of all people. And I should point out that it's Bill Nighy, the actor, not Bill Nighy, the science guy.
Yes.
I feel weird every time I have to say the name Bill Nighy, because I have to emphasize that it's Nighy and not Nye, because otherwise people would think I'm talking about the science guy.
I mean, Bill Nighy might be a science guy. We don't know.
That's also true. And maybe Bill Nighy started in Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
And Kelly Garner from The Aviator and Lars and the Real Girl plays Marcy, Zach Galifianakis' assistant in the movie. Will Arnett is here as a FBI agent Kip Killian. And finally, Loudon Wainwright III, the singer-songrighter who shows up in a lot of Judd Apatow stuff. He was on the show Undeclared. He was in, I think, Knocked Up. He plays Grandpa in this movie. So there's that as well. And I'll tell you this. G-Force was actually kind of a hit, Mike.
You shut your whore mouth. I don't believe you.
Okay, first of all, somehow this movie had a budget of $150 million.
I mean, I guess it's like that peak Bruckheimer joint money. I guess, right? He hadn't fallen yet.
Yeah, there was a lot of clout coming. I mean, he just came off of the National Treasures and Pirates of the Caribbean. He had a lot of clout at this point in time. And I could see this being an expensive movie because of all the visual effects required to make this, hyper-intelligent gerbil team or guinea pig team or whatever the fuck it is. Anyway, yeah, this movie had a budget of $150 million, and it made almost $300 million, so almost double its budget. So, yeah, but if you were not seeing G-Force in the theater on the weekend of July 24th, 2009, which prime summer date right there, this was an attempt at a big blockbuster, and it succeeded. Yeah. I mean, it made money. But if you weren't seeing G-Force, you may have seen Orphan, the pretty good horror movie directed by Jean-Claude Serra, who would become known for his Liam Neeson movies later on, like Nonstop and The Commuter, which, by the way, Nonstop, greatest movie ever made. We've talked about that before. you could have also seen the romantic comedy The Ugly Truth with Katherine Heigl and Gerard Butler, two actors who have each made one good movie and have coasted on it for about 10 years. For Katherine Heigl, it was Knocked Up, and for Gerard Butler, of course, it was 300. Right. Or you could have been one of the cool kids seeing Armando Iannucci's hilarious In the Loop when it opened in limited release that day. That would definitely be the one to go see, because that movie is amazing. But some of you were seeing G-Force, and that's cool, too.
And here we are.
That's why we have this podcast. The IMDb plot synopsis for G-Force reads, "A specially trained squad of guinea pigs is dispatched to stop a diabolical billionaire from taking over the world." So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on G-Force?
Oh, man. G-Force is the longest 90 minutes that have ever been created. That's ever existed. This movie exists in some weird time loop sync thing. Right. I don't understand how I aged 45 years while watching this 90 minute movie.
I tell you, I mean, I had to watch it in like 20 minute chunks, just because like I didn't want to sit down and watch it for a full 90 minutes. I had to watch it for 20 minutes at a time and like go and do other things and then come back to it. G-Force is not great, man. It's not great.
No, which is so weird. It's so weird that this cast, I guess it's the writing, I guess. But this cast is incredible on paper. And you look at that and you're like, hell yes, we're going to make an awesome movie. And it's going to be, Bruckheimer in 2009, like you said, coming off National Treasure and Pirates of the Caribbean. It's going to be this big, silly, adventure movie. With this cast, I guess, right. Was the thought process.
Yeah, if this was a live action, like if they weren't playing guinea pigs and they were just playing humans, like that'd be pretty good.
Yeah. And then you're like, but wait, they're guinea pigs. And then it just all falls apart. Immediately. My favorite thing is when you and I were discussing this movie, or you were telling me about this movie before I had seen it, and it just kind of like cold open starts. They're already on a mission and like all this stuff. But it's just... They're guinea pigs, and they don't take 1 second to set that up at all. It just exists in this world.
Yeah, which I honestly kind of appreciate that they just like threw us into this world of guinea pig secret agents. But I feel like they could have just taken like a little bit of a step back. That sequence goes on for a long time. That's like a 10-minute sequence right there. And then afterwards, like there's like a cursory explanation, like, oh yeah, well I'm Zach Galifianakis and I made intelligent guinea pigs and I trained them to be secret agents. And I'm like, all right, why did you do this? And there's never like a plausible like explanation why he did this. He spent so much time wondering if he could. He didn't stop to think about whether he should. And that's basically that's the entire thesis behind G-Force. Quite frankly, right. I think G-Force it's occasionally like a pretty inventive movie. I think there are a couple of sequences that I enjoyed, and there are a couple of performances that I enjoyed. I think it's a fun idea, and I like the idea of like an action movie for kids, which is kind of what the National Treasure movies are,
Right.
And G-Force could have been in that line, but like for a much younger set of kids. Like I could see this being like action movies for 5 year olds. Kind of thing. I think that's basically its target demographic, and it must have succeeded because it made you know, almost $300 million. But yeah, I don't know. It's just nothing about G-Force really worked for me. There are a couple of fun action sequences, which Bruckheimer is pretty good at doing. But they're all in service of the most basic kind of go-for-broke kids movie that trades in, you know, just cute characters, fart jokes, adult references, instead of anything like resembling an actual story.
Yeah, and there's also a very odd, like, I don't know if it's like an Uncanny Valley thing going on with the G-Force. Not that, like, oh, they look so much like real guinea pigs. I'm freaked out. But more so, it's like, that's Sam Rockwell. Right. I don't know. It's a very odd thing. I guess, I don't know if it's a personal thing with me now, having been kind of not involved in the world of voice acting. That's not what I'm trying to say. Immersed, maybe, with Critical Role and following a lot of prominent voice actors on Twitter and
yeah.
all this stuff, and becoming aware of them, like of the actor that's doing these voices
right.
that do that for a living, that when you go see a live action actor, I don't know how to phrase that in yeah. a weird, you know,
an actor who generally trades in live action stuff doing yes. like a big, because a lot of times what happens, yeah, big Hollywood movies will cast like big name actors, and Sam Rockwell wasn't exactly a big name actor. He was a pretty popular character actor. But they will, you know, cast known actors in these, you know, voice roles for kids movies and stuff like that. I think DreamWorks really popularized, I mean, Pixar does it too, but DreamWorks really popularized it with Shrek. You know, where, like, you know, a lot of the movie was sold on the fact of, like, oh, Mike Myers is in this, and Cameron Diaz is in this, Eddie Murphy is in this. And DreamWorks does that a lot. You know, there was a period of their studio where it was, like, you know, they were building movies based on the actors who were in them. So it's like, Will Smith is in Shark Tale, and, like, you know, that kind right. of thing. And that was the selling point. And that's fine, but, you know, I think for the most part, there is, you know, a lot of some controversy in the voice acting community, because there are people who do this for a living who don't get nearly as much recognition. Right. And when you have these kind of movies, like, it's fine to cast a big actor in one of these movies, but I feel like it's got to be a role that is perfect for that big actor. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
You know, in the case of, like, Toy Story, you know, it's like Tom Hanks and Tim Allen, like, they're great in it, like, sure, whatever. And, like, even in Shrek, like, Mike Myers is great in that movie, like, sure, whatever. But then you have something like G-Force where it's like, why did you cast Sam Rockwell for this? Like,
why is Penelope Cruz in this?
Yeah, like, these aren't like people who are like big name, memorable. Like they're great actors. I mean, Sam Rockwell especially, Penelope Cruz is very good. But they're not marketable actors, I guess is what I mean. Like they're not people like, you know, like Will Smith right. or like Mike Myers. They're just you know, like Sam Rockwell was basically a character actor for most of his career, you know, and that's
yeah.
and that's what he's been doing. So why cast him in the lead role of this guinea pig movie for kids? Like, kids aren't going to see this movie because Sam Rockwell's in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even Nicolas Cage, even though he has a reduced role, you know, Speckles?
Yeah.
Speckles wasn't, you know, I guess we'll get into it for his role. But, you know, he's not an entirely prominent role. He's not a lead character, yeah, even though a lot of the movie hinges on him.
I'm pretty sure he gets top billing, though, which is interesting.
I mean, it's Nicolas Cage. Of course he does.
Well, yeah, I think he is probably, I mean, I'm looking through the cast. He probably is the biggest star of this yeah. cast that I was looking at here. Because, I mean, at this point, like, let's run through the cast real quick again. The G-Force is made up of Nicolas Cage as Speckles, Sam Rockwell as Darwin, Tracy Morgan plays Blaster, Penelope Cruz as Juarez, John Favreau as Hurley, and then there's another one called Bucky, played by Steve Buscemi, but he's not part of the G-Force, he's just an extra gerbil. You know, notable people, like all these people are like really good actors, or like really talented in their respective, you know, things. Also, John Favreau announced today that he's showrunning a new Star Wars TV show, just throwing that out there.
I saw that.
Preview the next film book cast.
Film news for free.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have thoughts on that later. But yeah, I mean, at this point, like, I think 30 Rock had just premiered, so Tracy Morgan was a supporting role on a low-rated sitcom, you know, at this point.
Yeah.
You know, Penelope Cruz, I think at this point, had won an Oscar already. So I think she has an Oscar, right? Am I making that up?
Probably. That seems right if it's wrong.
But even so, like, she's never really been in, like, really, like, you know, like, blockbustery type movies. So she's not, like, a marketable name. And then Jon Favreau is somebody that nobody was going to know. Like, you know, his most prominent acting role was Swingers, like 15 years earlier. and at this point, he had just directed Iron Man, but like he was the director, and like the bit role in that movie is Happy. And then you got Steve Buscemi, who's a great character actor, but again, not somebody you like sell a movie on. So it's weird for sure that like it's a big, like kind of star-studded cast of actors, none of which are like, you know, big marketable names except for Nicolas Cage. when there could be, like, you know, pretty talented voice actors who could fill out these roles.
Where I was sort of going to go is that it's, you know, I have this reaction when I see these kind of things where it's like that, like I said, that's just Sam Rockwell, because they usually aren't doing a voice, not necessarily a silly voice, not or anything like that, but they're just doing their normal voice that they're act that they act with,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
But at least to Cage's credit, he's doing a voice.
Oh, he's doing a voice, all right.
And he's doing it on 11. It's just, granted, it's a voice he's done already, but he's doing it.
Yeah.
And which makes it even funnier to me to learn that Mooch, the fly that has no lines, is done by Dee Bradley Baker, who's one of the most prolific and prominent voice actors, like, ever in that entire industry.
Yeah.
And he's doing a role where he doesn't use his voice.
He uses his voice.
Oh, you know what I mean.
He makes noises. Yeah,
he's making fly noises.
Yeah, yeah. Which he's had, like, one of his most prominent roles is whatever that fucking creature is in Avatar The Last Airbender. Is it whatever that is? He plays
Wasn't
that.
He one of the Batmans, too, in the that's the animated series.
Maybe. What I'm talking about is this Opa Appa creature or whatever. That doesn't have any lines. It just makes noises. It is something that he's done before. It's something that I think most voice actors do at some point. Just, like, do a role where they just, like, you know, make noises like burr, 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 and that's like. So,
but yes.
Sorry, that's my Adam Sandler voice. I was burr, burr, burr,
burr. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so we're talking about Cage now in this movie. We talked about his voice. So what did you? I think Cage is given the best performance in this movie.
Yeah,
full stop.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you're on board with Cage's performance. Because I feel like he's what got me through this movie a lot of the time.
Yeah, it sort of feels like he's the kind of only one that realized that it's a goofy kids cartoon almost, right? Like it's just because people aren't all animated, it's not a cartoon. Right? That's the only thing that differentiates it.
Exactly.
From that genre. And it's Peggy Sue Got Married.
He's
right?
doing his Peggy Sue Got Married voice, which is the best because that's his goofiest voice. And
well, how was it? Like you changed your voice in this picture. Like it was unrecognizable. What about that character made you like just go with this kind of underground voice that you was?
You know, the character looked like something that needed a weird voice. I mean, because he looks weird, and it was a voice I've been working on for a while. That's the voice that I use when I'm stressed out or I'm frustrated. So rather than resorting to profanity or yelling, I'll start talking in that ridiculous voice and I'll start laughing because it's so stupid that it'll make light of any serious situation and I can't take it too seriously. Right. When Jerry came to me with G-Force, I was at that point because it was the last day of photography on National Treasure 2. And I was tired, and he said, would you do this? And I said, well, can I talk like that? And I went into the voice, and he said, yeah, you can.
Right.
So that's how it happened.
Darling, you're behind schedule. You all right?
First mission jitters, I guess.
Do you want to abort?
No, it's okay. I've been trained to do this.
I'd follow you into a snarling pack of
Doberman.
Oh, wait.
I already have. Now get your fuzzy hind end moving.
Yeah, it's that really high-pitched, nasally voice that seems so out of place in Peggy Sue Got Married. But it works here. Like, he finally found an outlet for this voice, is what I'm saying.
Yes, I think he was doing the G-Force voice in Peggy Sue Got Married.
You think
through time.
You think G-Force was a twinkle in Nicolas Cage's eye back in 1986?
One day I'm going to play a star-nosed mole, and he's going to sound like this. He's workshopping it live on screen,
and his uncle's just like, dude, what the? Like, come on, what the fuck are you doing? Kathleen Turner is giving an Oscar-winning performance, and you are doing this voice.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair, I really like Cage's performance in Peggy Sue Got Married.
Yeah,
primarily because of that voice. But yeah, his voice here is fantastic, and yeah, Cage plays Speckles, the star-nosed mole, who turns out to be the villain of the movie. He betrays G-Force, he's the traitor, or more accurately, he is the mole. And you know, it's fine that the mole is the mole, like, that could almost be kind of clever, but then the movie calls attention to that fact, like, really blatantly, and it's like, alright, that's not clever anymore, now you, like, you ruined it. at the end, like, Tracy Morgan, like, even says, like, man, I can't believe the mole was the mole, and he, like, does, like...
He's turns like, to the camera.
Yeah, turns to the camera, winks. And it's not even the gerbil anymore. It's just Tracy Morgan live, just being like...
Yeah.
But yeah, Cage is easily the highlight of this movie, I think. And I think it's probably his best vocal performance so far. This is the third movie that we've seen from Cage where he does a vocal role after Christmas Carol, the movie, and The Ant Bully. And yeah. I think this is a movie that almost feels of a piece with those two movies, because these are profoundly weird films. You know, yeah. I find a lot of times the weirdest entertainment is kids' entertainment. And I don't understand why that is. Maybe
it's a weird blend of having to also make it funny for adults.
Yeah,
I think
that could be part of it. Maybe kids just have like a larger threshold for weirdness, which is definitely possibly true. But at the same time, it just seems like a lot of times these movies will throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. I think that's true of pretty much all three of these movies: Christmas Carol, The Ant Bully, and G-Force. Because I mean, like even in The Ant Bully, you know, that's a movie where like. Remember there was the decapitated fly head thing that happened?
Oh my god,
fucking horrifying! Like that's
oh, we got something to talk about for G-Force then too.
Ooh, what do we? Okay, so I'll be clear here. I watched this movie like 2 weeks ago when we were supposed to review it, and we had like scheduling issues delayed it. I only have like vague memories based off my notes on what G-Force was. So if you have something to talk about, Mike, please feel free.
Okay. So in the, you know, there's a long and storied tradition in children's movies, as you're saying, of some weird shit going on that we just kind of gloss over. Even Andy in Toy Story blowing shit up.
Right.
Although, I mean, that's kind of the plot of that movie, but you know what I mean?
You mean Sid from Toy Story blowing shit up.
Sid, that's what I meant.
Yeah, Andy's a good guy, man. Come on.
Andy's the one with the, yeah.
Andy's a heart of gold. Don't.
Yeah, that's right. I regret accidentally selling his memory.
Yeah, don't disparage Andy, man. His memory. Yeah. Yeah, he died after he walked off into the sunset in Toy Story 3.
He went off to college and then died. Nobody tells you. That's what Toy Story 4 is about. Hot scoop right here.
You heard it here first on this Nicolas Cage podcast.
Okay.
Cage G-Force. Plays the guy who killed him.
Oh my god. So in G-Force, they get
a crossover with G-Force. Cage plays the guinea pig who killed Andy from Toy Story.
Oh my god! Can't wait for the cinematic universe that this creates.
Exactly. All right, I'm sorry, Mike. Continue.
No, it's fine. I love it. G-Force gets busted. You know, the FBI. Will Arnett shows up and revokes their funding or whatever the hell people in the FBI do in this movie, right? So they sneak out. They escape. They get taken to a pet shop.
Yes.
And they're in the trying to get adopted so they can break out, basically.
Right.
And the family comes in, and the little girl, little boy, and is that Grandpa? Is that who you're talking
That's
about?
That's Grandpa, yeah, Loudon Wainwright the third.
The little girl picks out Juarez, right? Penelope Cruz's guinea pig.
Yep.
And then the young boy, picks out Hurley. He wants the fat one, right?
Yeah, Jon Favreau.
Yeah. And the pet shop clerk guy walks away, and the boy puts Hurley into a lacrosse stick and throws him into a python cage.
Yes.
Like, up into the thing where he's gonna feed him to a snake. Like that was that. Like he wanted to watch the dude die. He wanted to see get eaten by a snake.
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, the guy comes back and he's like, oh, where's the fat one? And he's like, I don't know, and walks away. He's a remorseless psychopath. Serial killers often start by hurting animals. That's what I'm saying here, Mike. And we just kind of gloss over it.
You know, I actually wrote a note down about that scene, too. I had forgotten about it until now, so I'm glad you brought it up. But there's my note was that, where the fuck did this pet shop owner go? that he didn't notice a gerbil, you know, flying across the room.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something that I would have seen in the beginning of Mindhunter. We're working out how to profile serial killers.
Yeah.
It's this scene
from G-Force. Yeah, no, you are not wrong. Yeah, that is some intense shit. Actually, what's interesting, when I was looking up reviews for this movie on Netflix and Letterboxd, a lot of them were very concerned because they thought that kids would see this movie and be very excited about guinea pigs and then get very upset at them when they don't do the crazy spy shit that the guinea pigs do in this movie. God. Or that the kids might imitate the behavior of the kids in this movie with the guinea pigs, and like throw them across the room, or like, you know, feed them to snakes or whatever. Like,
yeah.
So I get where you're coming from, and definitely those people did too. Now, Mike, how do you think this role fits into the roles that Cage has played so far in other movies? I mean, he's never played a guinea pig before, so this is fresh territory for him.
It's a first. I don't really know. It's the first time he's ever been a guinea pig.
that we know of,
right? But it's kind of fun to watch him be to just do a cartoon, even in Ant, but like, and play a character that fits that. Even I think in Ant Bully, he's playing, you know, the weird kind of like ant wizard thing guy. Right. But it kind of like played straight, it felt, if I remember, I think.
In Ant Bully, yeah. I mean, he was doing his normal voice in Ant Bully and like acting with it. But yeah, he was a wizard ant, which is pretty wild.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's fun to it's interesting to see him kind of being transitioning into like full on family films. Right. I mean, like National Treasure and National Treasure 2 were definitely that also.
Yeah.
But they have the action bent that he has been trying to do or has been doing for the last 15 years or whatever at this point, 10 years. But this is just he's just a cartoon acting in a family movie. And it's interesting, I guess.
Right, but it's also an action movie too. I mean, this is a family action film.
That's
in many respects, just with
guinea pigs. Not for his character, exactly.
No, yeah, and that's the thing. I think you know, he does get to play the villain of an action movie this time around, which he hasn't done since the beginning of Face Off, and that's really the only time it's ever happened.
Right.
And his performance here is less wild than the beginning of Face Off. But still,
true.
But still, you know, that's something. Also, an elite team working to stop a terrorist plot is the plot of The Rock. So there's that.
Yeah. This movie also features a car chase that reminded me a lot of the car chase at the beginning of The Rock.
Really? That's weird, because I remember we were talking about National Treasure 2 and how that movie's basically a remake of The Rock. And so now we got this one, too. I feel like Cage has been just chasing Cage and Bruckheimer have just been chasing The Rock their entire career.
That's kind of where I think I'm leaning, that Bruckheimer just was like, I made a two good movies once. Make them over again.
Yeah, let's make them again. But in that respect, I think Rockwell and Favreau in this movie are kind of like the Goodspeed and Sean Connery of The Rock in a weird way, sort of. I mean, I guess Rockwell would be Connery because he's the skilled one, and then Favreau would be Goodspeed because he's like unskilled, but like he's like learning on the job and stuff like that. Like, I could see it.
Yeah. Sure.
But anyway, so you mentioned the scene where the guinea pig gets thrown across the room, Mike. Are there any moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you that you wanted to discuss?
Oh, also, do you happen to know, Mike, you're a font of movie trivia. When did Transformers 1 come out?
2007, 2 years before this movie.
Okay. So I also feels like Hoyt Van, whatever his name is.
Hoyt Yeatman.
That guy. He saw the first like 20 minutes, I think, of Transformers 1 when like the appliances become Decepticons, and was like, "This is the movie I want." Because I mean, that scene was pretty funny, I guess, for a second when Darwin and Hurley are kind of find the coffee maker while they're trying to escape, and they kind of dig around in it, and it turns into a Decepticon.
Right. I mean, that's kind of – we haven't really talked about the actual supervillain plot of this movie. But, yeah, so Bill Nighy's plan is to take over the world by inserting microchips into all the coffee makers in the world or something like that. Or all the appliances, I guess. Like, I think it's all the appliances. Yes. But it's mostly coffee makers, I feel like. It's mostly what we see. And then at a certain point, all the coffee makers will turn into robots – they're basically – they turn into Ed 209 from RoboCop. That's basically what they do. And then they just go on a killing spree is basically his plan. And I don't know how that was going to work for him. Like I don't know what he would do after like, you know, coffee machines killed everybody in the world. It just doesn't seem like – I don't know what his end game there was.
Probably going to crash the coffee machine market, but, you know.
Probably. But, yeah, so that is the plot of this movie, essentially. That is the terrorist plots. And, yeah, it definitely feels heavily influenced by Transformers, for sure. How often do you think they played the Black Eyed Peas song, I Got a Feeling, in this movie?
Oh, like, my God. It's every scene, I think.
It's like a transition in this movie. It's like, okay, it's Black Eyed Peas time. Like, that's what we do as a transition now. It's like Star Wars
has the swipe.
Star Wars has the swipe. Fast and Furious is a butt shot, and G-Force has Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
And here's my joke for this, Mike. Black Eyed Peas feature very prominently in the movie, and since this came out in the year after 2008, I believe we can definitively call it 2000 late.
Oh my God. Thanks for getting in the cage.
Yeah, that's the end of the podcast right
that's
there.
It. Shut it down.
That's the end of the podcast period. There's no more episodes.
Yeah. That's it. No more.
But what were you saying?
I was going to say, Mike, I think you missed a crucial point of the plot.
Yeah,
to add more layers to the insanity that is this movie.
Okay.
Bill Nighy was played the whole time. He just wanted his appliances to communicate so they would be able to know stuff between how much coffee you use, and you could order it online automatically because the coffee machine knows how much it needs and blah, blah, blah. And Speckles played him the whole time.
True.
And he's the one that caused the – I swear to God. That's
Yeah, Nicolas Cage turns out to be the true villain of this movie, Speckles.
Yeah, Bill Nighy had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, it turns out Speckles the Mole has a huge grudge against humanity because I think his family was burned to death or something. And
they got exterminated. They got exterminated.
Yeah, that was some disturbing shit. There's a flashback sequence to Speckles' family and his whole community getting exterminated by humans. And Speckles gets away. But before he gets away, his dad turns to him and he says, "Son, if you ever get the chance to bring mankind to its knees, do it."
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. What last words those are. Like that's how I want to go.
Yeah. I want that on my headstone.
If you ever get the chance to bring mankind to its knees, do it. So yeah, Speckles is pretty definitively the bad guy, so much so that at the very end, he actually says to Darwin, "I am the bad guy now." Just so everyone knows.
We're all on the same page now.
Exactly. So that whole thing was insane. And then the movie like does sort of like an about face and Speckles. Like he redeems himself at the end. I think he like helps save them because he realizes the error of his ways. And then that's it. It's, you know, feels like he should be punished a little bit more. I think he has to like put some files away or something, and that's like his
he has to clean up all the space junk,
right? And that's you know, whatever. And then he even say he'll have to join G-Force at the end of it all, and it's like, you at the very least you can't let him join G-Force again. This is bad. This is bad FBI work.
Yeah, what a message to send to kids, huh?
Exactly. But yeah, as far as the action sequences go, I did think the car chase / gerbil ball scene
yes,
that was kind of fun. Like that was pretty entertaining and like pretty inventive, and like, you know, they had like fun with like having the different guinea pigs and the different balls and like transforming and doing all kinds of crazy shit. And, you know,
yeah,
I enjoyed that for sure. That was entertaining. But, you know, speaking of Black Eyed Peas, we mentioned that before. They play a lot in this movie. But this movie also has like very specific 2009 era cultural references that I think are just like they date the movie in a weird, like at the beginning of the movie, Sam Rockwell's character Darwin is, you know, breaking through like a wall or something, and he's like singing to himself a Pussycat Dolls song. He's singing like,
"Oh my god!"
He's singing. I think he's singing "Don't You." Is he singing "Don't You"?
Yeah.
He's like, "Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me?" Or like, but he was singing like about a hamster or something. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. But there might have been a blowtorch thing because that's what he's doing. I don't know.
That's what I think it was. Like, "Don't you wish your blowtorch was hot like me?" or something like that. And it's like, yeah, it's 2009. Is that's what it is. And a lot of times they'll just quote famous movie lines, and that's the joke. Like, that's
the whole joke.
That's the whole joke. There's a part where one character says, like, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning," like in Apocalypse Now. There's one part where Tracy Morgan quotes Top Gun. And he's like, "I feel the need for speed." There's one part where they quote Die Hard, and they say, like, "Yippee-ki-yay," and then they say something else. I don't remember what it was, some kind of censored version, because obviously they're not going to say motherfucker. So it's
how awesome would that have been?
Would have been amazing.
Yeah, I think he says what's Bill Nighy's character's name? I don't remember.
It's like Luke. I completely blanked on it. I have it written down. Hold on.
He says Yippee-ki-yay, Mister something.
Mister Falcon.
I don't remember what.
It's not Mister Falcon. Leonard Saber. Leonard Saber is the character's name. He's saying Yippee-ki-yay, Mister Saber or something like that.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's, you know, whatever.
Sure.
But yeah, anything else, Mike, that you wanted to bring up? I mean, I did want to just throw this out there that there's three mice that are in the cage with Hurley and Steve Buscemi's character, and the three mice are just a direct ripoff of the three aliens from Toy Story. Like, it's just straight up.
Holy shit. I was trying to place exactly. I knew it was something, and I couldn't remember what it was.
They speak in unison, and they like have like a reverent tone to like everything they do. They're just the three aliens, but they're mice.
Yeah, that's all. I want to also highlight the second scene in which the young psychopath serial killer to be features prominently, where he puts a blaster in the remote control car and he like jumps him over the trucks and stuff.
Yeah.
And then he spins him around and jumps him towards another car that has like jaws on it, and it's like opening and closing, and and Blaster evades it.
Yes.
In a mightily acrobatic feat. But like that kid wanted the Blaster to get chopped in half by this car.
Yeah. To be fair, weird. That seems kind of dope.
it was pretty chill, and then we get that awesome Top Gun quote.
Exactly. Oh my god. But yeah, that's the whole breakout sequence with Blaster and Juarez, where Tracy Morgan, Penelope Cruz, and he like saves her and she saves him, and it's like a whole like there are fun action beats in this movie that are only slightly hampered by the fact that they are guinea pigs.
I agree.
Yeah, it's whack. It's a whack movie.
It's whack. It's whack. Now who's 2008?
that's way before 2008. That's 2000 early, if anything.
All right. Thanks for getting to the cage again. Shut it down. I had another scene that I wanted. Oh, I mean, I remembered. Let's talk about Steve Buscemi as whatever the
as a German Bucky. Name. Bucky.
Bucky.
Bucky, the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
The Winter Gerbil.
There it is.
Let's talk about Bucky. What do you want to talk about, Mike?
He's fun. He's another. That's another character / performance from Steve Buscemi that recognizes this is a cartoon,
right?
And just goes to 11 playing this like weirdly like PTSD gerbil thing, hamster or whatever he is.
Right. He wants to not be called like a hamster or something like that. What was it?
Ferret.
Like,
he doesn't want to be called a ferret.
A ferret. Yeah. Because he's not a ferret, or he's a half ferret or something. Because said his mom's a ferret or something.
Yeah, which like also borders on weird like racist tones. like his grandpa was a ferret, so they all call him ferret. Like I don't know, it's very odd. And like they hammer on him about it, and he keeps telling them to shut up. And it's like I don't know, it's very weird.
Right, but yeah, that is a Bucky for sure. I mean, he's I said, is that what you wanted to say? Is that he's weird? Is that... Sorry, you were drinking water during that.
You can't do that to me, Mike. I expected you to also have something to say.
I watched this movie 2 weeks ago, man. I barely remember it. I remember Cage's silly voice. That's it. That's all I know.
Okay.
But yeah, no, I remember like Bucky has like a contentious relationship with Hurley, right? That's a thing.
Yeah.
And then he turns out to have like a secret tunnel underneath the cage, right? That was a thing too. Yes. And then he shows up again at the end. Yeah, he's just, you know, he's around. He's a. I have very little thoughts about Bucky, to be quite honest with you.
You have no strong opinions either way.
I am the neutrinos from Futurama in the situation.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair. If I die, I tell my wife I said hello. I did want to briefly mention that this movie, at the very beginning, kind of sexualizes Penelope Cruz's gerbil character. Kinda? And it was weird. Like it's like she does
super
like,
weird.
Like she does like, you know, a slow mo like getting out of the pool kind of saunter over to Tracy Morgan at the beginning of the movie. And like her fur is like dripping wet and stuff, and it's like, this is weird. I don't feel comfortable watching this. You know?
Yeah.
And it's weird. I feel like it doesn't really do it past that. It's just that like one shot. I was like, this is like oof. Like I don't oof. Like furries are probably into that, but I am not a fan of this.
No, yeah, it was very odd. And I mean, they do constantly talk about, like, Blaster is always trying to, like, pick her up.
Right.
Like, is always hitting on her, and she's interested in Darwin because Darwin's not interested in her or some weird...
Well, no, her arc is that she's not interested in Darwin, but she's saying she is to make Tracy Morgan jealous. But her whole arc in this movie is just, like, you know, eventually getting with Tracy Morgan. That's, like, her entire... Your character.
Yeah.
So like it begins off and they have like, you know, chemistry together, but and he Tracy Morgan wants to take her out, but she's like, no, because that'll make him more interested, like that'll keep him interested, and she says he's interested in Darwin. And then Darwin like approaches her about it and he's like, hey, Blaster said you were like interested in me, and she was like, no, I'm not interested in you. I just want to say that to, like or whatever, and it's like, all right, I'm done with this plot. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Also, great message to send to children.
Always good. Always good.
Yes.
And this movie ends, like all kids' movies from the mid-2000s must, with a big dance party. Mike, that's a...
Did Shrek start that?
Shrek definitely had it.
Yeah.
I mean, Shrek had the... did Shrek actually end with a dance party? Or was that just like the... Because I remember there was the DVD special feature, which was big, which is the Shrek and the Schwamp karaoke dance party.
Well, and I think it ends... I think Shrek ends with them all singing and dancing to...
I'm a Believer? Is it the thing I'm a Believer?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. They sing the Smash Mouth I'm a Believer at the end of Shrek. That's why Shrek's the best movie of all time. But it's...
Shrek 5, can't wait.
Can't wait. Can we have it? Bringing to the film bookcast jokes and complete works. Yeah. But yeah.
Whoa.
crossing the streams. But yeah, no, the Shrek must have been like a pretty significant factor in the dance party movement of the 2000s. Because
the dance party cinematic universe.
It happened a lot. And it still happens a lot. Like, it still happens in a lot of kids' movies. Like, there's a big dance party at the end because a lot of times they just don't know how to end the movie. And so they... And they know kids like dancing, and they'll find it funny, and they can have characters doing silly stuff dancing, and that's it. That's all you had to do. So we wrap up with the Black Eyed Peas one more time, and then we're out. That's basically
cut to credits.
Yeah, gotta get that boom, 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 and then we're out.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Anyway, do you have any other thoughts about G-Force, Mike? Any other scenes or moments or characters that you wanted to bring up? Or should we wrap this up?
Just tell me what the people have to say, Mike.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's move on to Netflix reviews and Letterboxd reviews for G-Force starting right now. Here's a 1-star review of G-Force. As I sat watching this movie, I couldn't help but smile at how much of a failure this movie is.
Burn.
To sum it all up, a bunch of guinea pig spies roll around, deliver poor dialogue, blow up kitchen appliances, and try to insert awkward potty humor to lighten the mood. The plot line was so out of sync, I should have just went into another theater and started watching what they were playing in there. Trust me on this, if you don't want to have to sit through 90 minutes of potty humor, unbelievable storyline, and sentimental love muffins, do not watch this. I do not know what he means by sentimental love muffins.
Yeah, what?
I have no idea. Let's go to the next one. Here's a 5-star review of G-Force. I think G-Force is a cool movie. I think it is a movie that the whole family will enjoy. 5 stars, good movie. I'm not trying to spoil it, but the ending is so good. If you like action and secret agents, then this is your movie. If you like it, you are too good of a person to be alive. Thought that when I first saw the movie, I would want to be a secret agent so bad that I was raising money to get spy gear. That is how good the movie is. So I'm glad the movie had like a positive effect on somebody's life. Is all I'm saying.
It's nice that that person's parents let them on their Netflix account.
Exactly. Now we're going to do some Letterboxd reviews. Here's a 3-star review of G-Force. This is a pretty short one. When they played the same Black Eyed Peas song for the third time, I thought, yes, this is indeed my shit. Here's a 1/2-star review of G-Force from Letterboxd. It's less than 1 star. It's a 1/2-star review. Funny story. I met Zach Galifianakis a few months after the movie came out, but I was too young to know him from anything else. I said to him, hey... aren't you the guy from G-Force? And he was really disappointed for the rest of the conversation.
Amazing.
Here's another one. Here's a 1.5-star review of G-Force from Letterboxd. I watched this because I love guinea pigs. The pros, the guinea pigs kind of look like guinea pigs, which means cute. Nicolas Cage is one of the voice actors, and he sounds like a crazy person imitating Nick Cage. With a nosebleed.
Holy shit, that's so perfect.
The cons. The movie isn't funny. The movie has such a goofy, overactive plot that I can't imagine appealing to any demographic besides Merkel heads.
I don't know. It seems dangerous to even have said that.
aside from one or two little moments, the movie basically shows every single thing you shouldn't do with a guinea pig as a pet. I am imagining all the little kids begging their parents for a guinea pig after this movie and all the bad things that follow when that happens. Poor real life piggies.
Yeah, right.
That's fair. And I got one more. It's a very short one. It's a 1-star review of G-Force. It's six words long. Did not hit the G spot.
Oh my gosh. That's so not what I was expecting.
But I think that can be the perfect way to end our discussion of G-Force, Mike. I think that about wraps it up.
Yeah. For us. I couldn't have put it any better myself.
Exactly. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, too bad that campaign is over.
Oh, man. Didn't know that. That's sad.
Yeah. It's okay. We won.
That's good.
Yeah.
Does that mean you're free more nights of the week now? Is that a thing?
Oh, my sweet summer child.
No.
Campaign two is just beginning.
All right. That's cool. So you'll be plugging that pretty soon, I'm sure.
Yes.
All right. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriccio. You can find this podcast on iTunes. You can rate it, subscribe, take a moment to give it a review. Support this podcast, Filmbook, take part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. And any help, feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast, your email about the title of your email, because we produce just so many different hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, in which we'll talk Nicolas Cage as he cashes in yet another voiceover paycheck with 2009's Astro Boy. And this one, I have not seen this one. I remember it coming out. I'm kind of intrigued by it because it feels like the kind of thing that Cage would be really into. You know, like he seems like he would be a big fan of the Astro Boy manga and anime and stuff like that. So I could see like him doing a pretty good job here.
Yeah, he's definitely into some weird, like, I lost it.
Fair enough. So we'll be talking about Astro Boy next. Plus, you can keep an eye out for a film bookcast where I don't really know what we're doing yet. We could talk Annihilation or Wrinkle in Time at some point, but most likely I think we're just going to do an Oscars recap sometime this week.
A little film book after dark for you.
A little film book after dark, which is always good. So thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage. On that next shit now. I'm sold 3008, you sold 2008. I got that boom, 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 that future boom, boom, boom. Let me get